Okay, today is, what is today, 14th of March, 2013. This is the second interview with Coach Chris Clark. We're here at the Porter Boat House on campus. My name is Troy Reeves. I'm with the UW-Madison Oral History Program. Chris, we talked a lot about recruiting last time and sort of current rowing topics. I want to come back to what we started with last time, which was the 70s. You talked a little bit about going to the community college. You talked about quitting for a weekend.
Yeah.
I want to start by once you got there and started rowing, did you take naturally to it?
Yeah, it was, I didn't even think about what it took to be a good rower, but tall, long-legged, long arms, give you a great advantage. Plus, personality-wise, it helps that you're willing to focus on one thing almost in a compulsive way.
Mm-hmm.
So
did the coach see that? I mean, obviously, he saw the build.
Right.
But
no,
did he see the other things?
I alluded to why I quit. Again, my parents were laissez-faire as far as things, a little different than my own parenting style, but the just because you already in a couple of weeks, it seems counterintuitive. I was one of the better guys, and this is entering new territory for me, like anybody else there that was a walk-on, realizing I was one of the best guys, and that was prompted my, man, I don't know what I'm doing, how could I possibly be that good? And the pressure got to me, and that's why I quit on that weekend. So, but as I had said before, it cleared my mind. Once you, every single freshman at one time or another wants to quit, if not multiple times.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them do, as we talked about. So that helped me. I want to do this. So. But I did take to it quickly.
When was the, is it called what is a rowing competition? What's a rowing
regatta,
competition?
Usually.
A regatta?
Yeah.
Did you have a regatta that freshman year?
Well, there was a lot of them, but okay. In the fall there was a few. I remember when we knew we were fairly good because our freshmen, the sophomores who were the JV there, because they're the upperclassmen at a community college.
Mm-hmm.
They were the top team on the West Coast last year, the year before. I guess that would have been the spring of 77.
Mm-hmm.
And we beat them in a particular competition about 2 months into my rowing career. So, I guess we're okay. It still seemed unbelievable to me because it was relatively easy for me to do. So.
Mm-hmm. Now, was that not only because you had taken to it and were adept to it, but there were others?
Other guys, yeah. Turned out our stroke had rowed some in high school, which was rare at that time, at that place. Now it's a much bigger sport in high school because of Title IX, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So, but good athleticism for rowing goes a long way, no question.
So was it the same? I mean, you talked here when we were talking sort of about current events that there's the first eight and the second eight. Was that the same?
Yeah, I can't even think of, there was probably, 80 or 90 guys came out in the fall of that 1977. I bet there was 3 to 4 days worth of people. But by the very end, I think there was 12 of us in the freshman year, which was typical. So typical there. I didn't know that it was typical, but it was.
Right.
Especially at community college. You're already flaky. Or not mature enough, or too dumb, or something. There's some reason why you're there.
Mm-hmm.
So
what about academics at community college?
Now that I know, it was in a glorified high school as far as rigor. However, having now been to all these universities, the best teachers I ever had by far in college were at a community college. By far. Mm-hmm. There's no comparison. Having, I'd been at Berkeley and Stanford and Oxford, none of them teach. They don't teach. And,
mm-hmm.
and even, I'm sure it's, there was a few exceptions I had in all those years. And I remember, going to big lectures with people who were real good. They were feted on campus. And I thought, this is the exception at a big university, whereas at a community college, it's a rule.
Mm-hmm.
People obviously not having to publish, right?
Right.
So that's a big thing. But teaching is valued there. That's why it really sold me on community college. It's such a powerful tool in any state. And again, as I had said, why here? It's not touted or it's not as valued here as it is in a place like California. It's a great place for people to go to learn anything, but also to get them interested intellectually to go to college. Mm-hmm. You know, but again, you know, you're here.
Yeah. The MATC is sneered upon by upper middle class people.
Right.
Like it's somehow, you know, you've lowered yourself.
I remember they're building a lot of buildings out at MATC. And then a few years ago there was a referendum, you know, you voted for it. I voted for it. Mm-hmm. Okay, how much money do they need? I'll give it to them. Seriously. It looks nice now, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's a valuable tool.
So what did you do? Did you do any training or any rowing that first summer, the summer in between freshman and sophomore?
Yeah. It was so easy, you know, and the ethics of sports were different then. I was around that summer and took sailing classes of all things, because where you row is where also with the sailing center for Orange Coast College. And I sculled a lot. That's when I learned to scull. But it was not organized, you know, with 3 or 4 times a week. Maybe mm-hmm. 2 or 3 times, I don't remember. But it helped. You know, that's rowing a single scull.
Okay.
You know, a one-man boat.
Right, so not only were you sailing in the summer, you were rowing just...
Right.
Okay.
I managed to somehow successfully convince my parents every summer that, oh, I don't need to get a job. I'll do that next year. So it worked,
mm-hmm.
but it was fun.
Did you stay with them in the summer?
No, we had a house down in Newport Beach. We lived, our actual house was about 20 miles away, and they weren't there most of the time. So it was good. It was a good life.
Mm-hmm.
For Lou's fancy free.
So coming back the second year.
I rode on the ergometer, you know, the rowing machines, which are very mm-hmm. different than today.
Mm-hmm.
Because the few that we did as freshmen, it was so painful. And so you were so ill-prepared, I thought to myself, I don't want to go through that again. So I actually spent time on it, which is a very different device than you have today. It wasn't easy to train on, but it helped me. So right away, sophomore year, I was the top guy on the team on that machine. Not necessarily because I was so great, just because I had prepared for it,
right?
Which helped. So then I got elected captain, which is the only time I've ever been elected captain of anything, which even then I thought was a little odd. But that's all right. I took it.
So you are. It sounds like you already knew. I mean, obviously you knew you were pretty good at this, but you also at least started to understand that you needed to sort of continue to do it.
Right.
To either stay the same or get better.
Right, right. I figured that out, right. But I was still an immature athlete. I mean, hence the fact that after that, I got in at University of Pennsylvania, and I was smart enough to realize I didn't want to go back east. I was too Californian, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then I remember I provisionally got in at Cornell. They wanted me to take some history, so I don't want to go to Cornell. It's even worse weather-wise. And then going to Cal, and then at the last minute or something, I applied to Stanford. And this is in the summer of 1979, and I want to say it was like August. They admitted me, and I thought, what the hell? Maybe I'll go to Stanford. Now I know they have a crappy rowing team. Whereas Cal didn't. And I went, and I figured out in about 2 minutes after. I remember going down to the boathouse at Stanford. This is fall of 79. I think, I can't do this. It was just so amateurish and, you know, club-like. So that here I am at Stanford. Maybe I could live without rowing. I couldn't. And then it was about a month or two later. Some of my buddies were at Cal. I started the process of transferring there. So Stanford was sort of a lost year. It was kind of fun. I got to live life of a regular student.
Mm-hmm.
Boring as all get out, as far as I was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
People talked about all-nighters. I'll never forget that. All-nighters. I didn't even know what they meant. I had never studied like that my entire life. It was so much easier. It was so easy. A private school is so easy compared to a public school. I just showed up and I got a B. And I got good grades there. I think it was 3, 5, or 6, or 7. I couldn't. It didn't require any work at all. And so my conclusion was private schools are easy because it's more customer service oriented.
Mm.
Whereas, you know, public schools,
mm-hmm.
it really wasn't much different than a community college. I seriously. I liked it, but it wasn't very rigorous. And then Berkeley was very different.
So did you stay the whole year at Stanford?
I did, yeah.
Okay. And then transferred to Cal the next?
Yeah, yeah.
But you didn't row?
That summer, I didn't at all while I was at Stanford. Okay. So I rowed my 2 years at North Coast. And, mm-hmm. and then that summer between, summer of 19, I was at 80, I started rowing in Newport Beach again with a rowing club, and we rowed, We went down to Mexico City of all places to row. But I rode maybe 3 days a week, 4 days. It seemed like a lot of the time to prepare for Cal. God, I had, things were loose. I had no place to live in particular. I just showed up at Cal. I want to say school started. Now school starts. I think they've switched to a quarter system, I think. Mm-hmm. Maybe a semester, I don't know. Mm-hmm. But it starts at end of August. Whereas at the time, and this is like, mid to late September, I just remember driving up there. Crashing out on a friend's girlfriend's apartment at first, and not even have any place to live. So, but I figured it out.
So when you rode in Mexico, you were with friends that...
Oh, these are just rowing club guys, yeah.
Okay, so...
That was odd, just my impressions there was just... It would take us 2 or 3 hours to drive to the rowing course, even though it was like 20 miles, because the traffic was so bad. I have no idea what it's like now. Mm-hmm. It was unbelievable. The first color newspaper I ever saw was in Mexico City, and we were on the cover of one of them. Today you would have a tabloid. It was a picture of us because, we all had blonde hair. It was right after racing, and we were head down, barfing, or, might as well have been. But I remember I have that paper somewhere. Front page in color, 1980. You didn't see that in the U.S. at that time.
And at that point, obviously it was a little too young for your time, but the 80 Olympics was boycotted by the West, so... Yeah,
obviously. I knew there was... that's how it impacted us all in 1984, because a lot of those guys came back to row. Made it difficult, because they were good.
Right.
I remember being at Stanford when the hockey team won, I remember that.
Mm-hmm.
It's a big deal.
It certainly was. So you get to Cal. And you're now, sort of technically academically a senior, but does that mean anything in terms of, do you only have 1 year of rowing eligibility? Does that
help? Things are way looser then, but they only gave me 1 year of eligibility in those 2 years, the second year of it. And it went down to the wire on it because this guy for the coach from UCLA had a grudge that I didn't go there. And now that I know the rules, and the rules certainly weren't less liberal than, it wasn't more regulated then. But I could have had 2 years of eligibility. All it would have taken was someone to be more clever in the compliance to say, this is the way it is, this guy's rowing. But they didn't, because I was a double transfer, he invoked that there's a certain rule about double transferring. But the rule is, it has to do with coming from a club on your second try, in other words, at Stanford. It wasn't a varsity program at the time, it is now. And I didn't row from them, but that didn't matter anyway. So I go all the way into the... the spring, thinking I'm going to be able to race with them, and I didn't. So then I was just rode with the California Rowing Club that my first year there. But again, I think I was there. I did it the entire fall. I raced with them. Like I was eligible in the fall, if I remember. And then couldn't do it in the. But even then, you practice in their practices. It was like I was on the team.
Right.
But I wasn't able to compete. Was that it? Yeah, that was it. I could think I'd remember. So,
Did you like the competition? Are you a competitive guy? Did you get in the...
Yeah, but I'm not super competitive in the way that some people are. The rowing appeals to, I suppose, a lot of different people, but not the least, which for me, it was just simply to test yourself. So I wasn't that interested in outside. I'm more interested in myself. I felt self-centered in some way. But it appeals to a lot, like running does, or marathon. It's all about you, not anybody else.
So
that part I liked.
Even though you weren't actually competing at Cal, you were getting, it sounds like you were getting what you needed because you were...
Yeah, and fully involved. I just didn't get to do the races in the spring. Mm-hmm. I even did in the fall. Now that I think about it, God, it's been so long since I even thought about it. So, I mean, you know, the entire season is only 2 months anyway. I didn't feel like I missed much. It would have helped me, though, because they weren't as good as I thought they would be, and they lost to UCLA, and they lost a few races they shouldn't have lost. I know I could have helped them, mm-hmm. but still, it made me more hungry. So
it says you graduated from Cal with a degree. You sort of alluded to this, but academically, you think Cal was more rigorous than Stanford?
No question it was. No, in my mind. And it was just, you know, there's no touchy-feely pat on the back. But talk about running blind, though. You know, I was never the type to avail myself to any resources. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that, you know, it's a constant issue even here at any university, right? They're always telling you should go see the advisor, you should... Young men in particular, we think we don't need anybody. Mm-hmm. That's typical. Mm-hmm. And it's the people that need it the most are the ones that don't do it. And it's often the really good student who understands. I'm going to go talk to that person.
Right.
So
as you were graduating from Cal, what did you think your future held, or did you even really?
Well, I just wanted to row. Yeah. Try for the Olympic team in 84.
Okay. So graduated from Cal and... Like 82, maybe?
It says, it's funny, I think my diploma actually lists my graduation, I think, in like August or one of the summer months of 1983. Only for one reason. Not that I was going to school there the whole time, because I was done in 82. It was as simple as this, that you had to apply for graduation, and I didn't bother. I think that's accurate. Okay. I'm almost positive it says, I would bet. I almost don't think it says 83. And so, you know, I'm always, especially, remember how, like, a decade ago, there was the big rage of people on the resumes, you know, like, fibbing them or lying, they're all getting fired. Mm-hmm. I remember thinking, but 82 makes sense, because that's what anybody would think of me as an 82. Mm-hmm. But then I'm almost positive my diploma, if someone actually looked, it would say 83. Mm-hmm. So I think I decided to say 83, even though it's confusing if anybody knows me. I think 83, he wasn't going to school there. But the diploma says 83. I'm pretty sure it says August. So I think. Mm-hmm. Jeez, I don't know.
And that's just because...
Only because I didn't...
You didn't go through the steps.
I's and cross the T's. That's it. And I just, the next few years, I just rode all the way through, really, 1985. Mm-hmm. And went to the Pan Am Games in 83. Didn't make the Olympic team in 84. Stupid decisions on my part. And led to that, I would say. And then rode the World Championships in 85, and then went to Oxford. So.
Okay. So I want to take these one by one then, because it says you won a Pacific Coast Championship in 1982.
Yeah, that was...
So that was senior year at
right,
Cal?
Yeah.
So that was the Cal team that won
right.
the...
Yeah, okay. We were good. And there was... rowing's always been balkanized until fairly recently, similar to college football, you know, like who the national champion is, that kind of thing. You know, mm-hmm. football is always an issue. And they had just started a new national championship that spring in Cincinnati, or in June of 1982. And we went to the inaugural. Now that I know a little more about rowing, and God bless my coach at Cal, he's a great guy, one of the smartest guys I've ever met. He'd rowed the Olympics with his brother in 68, but he didn't really know anything about coaching. Or about how to operate and lead a team from in the spring, and then make them keep their speed, because to some extent the speed of an eight or any team is a little bit ephemeral. You know, it doesn't just keep getting better, mm-hmm. especially when you're rowing high cadences, which is what you do in the spring. You're rowing many strokes per minute, and so we peaked in May, and then. We have like 3 or 4 weeks until this championship, and by the time we got there, we were just flat. And of course, you know, we were devastated. We had no idea what was going on. Well, I know now. You get stale, mm-hmm. and even the special cohesion that can come quickly doesn't last that long. You've got to keep freshening it up or changing people around, and he didn't. And plus, you have to drop the kid. Easiest thing to do in a situation like that is. Do a miniature run through the entire season in a few weeks. In other words, go back to going lower and easier and just kind of rebuild it. Mm-hmm. Didn't do that.
So you're saying that in 82 you won the Pacific Coast Championships,
right.
But then there was
this
new
big gap,
new sort of mythical national championship.
I want to say it was June 11th or 12th or something in Cincinnati, Ohio. And it ran from 82 to, God, when was it? Like maybe 96 or 95, I can't remember.
Okay.
And it really was set up to benefit Harvard. Like a lot of things. The guy that started it was these were Procter & Gamble people that started it because they had money and it was in Cincinnati. And the guy that ran it, I think he went to Harvard. But it was set up perfectly for Harvard that they could do the Harvard-Yale race, which was always like the first weekend in June, and they go to this race. Hence, they won it a lot. Yale won the first one. It was the only one they ever won, but Harvard won at least four or five times after that.
Mm-hmm. So, how does a either a Pacific Coast Championship or this national championship go? Are you
Pacific Coast is just Pac-10 is what it was.
Right.
It's the same thing. So.
Are you seated, like almost like bracketed? Like
Well, this particular regatta, Pac-10s, at the time was done at Redwood Shores, which is where we currently race. It's a two-lane thing. So it was more like, instead of a regatta, it was a dual race situation. Mm-hmm. And you just, you know, each win, you moved up the...
Okay.
So the final was... a dual race as opposed to six boats across.
Okay. But the race in Cincinnati was a six...
A typical six-boat race.
Okay. So are you going out in heats? So, like, if you win or do...
what? Heat in Cincinnati. I think it was a final only, if I remember.
So they took the champions from...
Yeah, various areas, and we were slow.
Did you know it going in, or was
no,
it just
knew,
something
I
that
knew
you...
About, I knew... few days before, like this, we don't. But I knew nothing about coaching or anything or why we were slow.
Mm-hmm.
And then we had already planned to go to Henley and Row in England, and my trip kind of sucked. We didn't enjoy it as much as we could have, just because we knew we were slow.
Mm-hmm. So you went and competed in England.
Yeah, and we were in the Grand Challenge, which now college crews never, for the most part. Meaning those are the best teams, national teams. And we went against the British national team, you know, who smoked us. And then Yale had an easier bracket and because they had won the... Mm-hmm. So we didn't face them, and they at least made it to the final, and they got smoked too, just like we did. So, but it was, you know, more of a dog and pony show trip than anything competitive.
Was that your first time out of the country? Again, you went to Mexico, I guess.
Yeah,
that was your first time.
First time, yeah.
Okay.
So I liked it. It was fun.
So then, silver medal in the Pan Am Games, how do you become a rower that gets to row for the Pan Am Games?
Sometimes you go through a camp situation, and like here, and, you know, they select boats, or else you roll in the trials. And I had come here to a camp with some of the Cal buddies, and one of them, and then I went a month here, and then I didn't make the final cut, and then they were selecting world championship boats, but also Pan Am boats. I didn't make the Pan Am 8, and then we went... because there were some trials further or later in the summer.
Mm-hmm.
And my buddy and I went with one of the pairs, and we won that trial. So.
Okay. Do you mean you came here to train?
I came here, yeah, in the beginning of June of 1983 for about a month. That's my first and only time here before I moved here.
Any?
That's how I got to know Jabbo.
Okay, so you got to know Jabbo, and it's...
But that doesn't really have any bearing on me any more than it was a pleasant place and I liked it.
Okay. So you had a good impression of it,
but you
didn't think, oh, I'll come back here someday.
I can even remember being in a wedding in September of 93 down in Lake Geneva, you know, which is not very far from here, and thinking, wow, pretty close to Madison. That's a cool place. But that was it. I'm like, wow, mm-hmm. You know, a year later I'm here ensconced. Just didn't think any more than that.
So in the Pan Am Games, you were in
a pair with a coxswain, right?
Okay.
It's two guys and a coxswain, which is kind of an old dinosaur of an event, but it still exists. I just remember the lake had the piranhas, I think. I can't remember, but I think it did. At least that's what I remember.
So,
that was in Venezuela, Chavez.
That's what...
You know, very primitive, I can tell you that. I do remember... going to watch basketball, though Michael Jordan was on the team. I remember that.
But all, not that I remember Michael Jordan. I just remember later, oh yeah, he was on that team.
Right.
So.
I can't remember if that was the one that Ted Turner put on TBS. I can't remember if I saw the Pan Am games or not.
That was the Goodwill games.
Probably. Oh, right. That's right. That was his own. That was his own.
Made for TV.
Yeah. So did you basically go down to Venezuela Row and come back, or was it like an Olympic village where you got to hang out with other athletes?
Yeah, there was a village, but when you're done, usually they boot you out of the village. That's typical in the Olympics, too. You don't necessarily get to stay there the whole time. And I remember me and a bunch of other guys, we went into Caracas, so we had a free hotel room, stayed there a few days, and enjoyed it. I just remember the beer was $4 a case, that much I remember.
Wow.
Yeah, that was cheap even then.
Yeah.
And it was fun.
So after you finished the Pan Am...
Came back and trained more.
Right.
That's when we had a first permanent national team coach arrived on the scene about a month later. Chris Korzenowski is his name. Polish guy. And just came in, like a lion and favored the older guys and not guys like me.
Mm-hmm.
But I was still clueless, though. I had no idea what I was doing.
So where was this training?
Training was all over at the time. Okay. And it's funny, he just emailed me a couple days ago. He's insisting on trying to get me to... He still is a U.S. national team, or at least involved in trying to get me to speak at this conference down at the annual one they have. And then last year, I always demurred because it's my wife's birthday is the beginning of December. Mm-hmm. So I don't like to leave that weekend. And this time, because of the cat, her birthday's on the 2nd of December, it's about as far away from that. It always goes.
Mm-hmm.
It's like when the 6th or 7th is the last, or is the first weekend.
Mm-hmm.
I haven't bothered riding mags. I'm not coming. No interest. I don't like to speak of those things. I avoid them at all costs. Unlike a lot of academics, well, I'm not an academic. I have no interest. Because what I'm saying, you can't do unless you can do it.
Mm-hmm.
Not that it's magic or you just can't do it. There's no point. And most of the people there, why bother to tell them something they can't do
mm-hmm.
or incapable of doing? And why give away any secrets I have? It's very different than, I know academics, you're constantly having to present a paper, right?
Right.
And I'm not saying it's very different, but it's different. My sister being an academic, God, she'd go to conferences, once a week it seemed like.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, that was just an aside because right. that guy is still on the scene after all these years.
Right.
The coach, and he, I was not the insight group at that time. So.
Mm-hmm. So in a presentation like that, even though you don't want to present, would there be people that you'd want to see and chat with, or is it?
No, you can always learn something. But I just, I really like the fact that we're isolated here. It's great.
Mm-hmm.
I enjoy it. And you can always learn something, but learning is so, it's so basic in so many ways
mm-hmm.
that I see so many coaches that chase, these mythical advantages, and they forget the part of, I guess you could split coaches down a lot of different ways, but not the least, it's all about the athlete, 100%, and I don't want to focus on anything else.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the equipment. It's not about the training. All of that matters, but it's all about the athlete, 100%. And I know that.
Mm-hmm.
One thing I did last fall was I was asked by the local organization for the high schools, like in the northern Midwest, that I went to talk to, because that's practical, because we want kids to come row for us.
Right.
But that'll do. But a bigger national tennis. They're going to drone on and on about all their stupid training ideas, which either have no relevance to me,
mm-hmm.
or, even I'm amazed sometimes how simple it is and how unchanging it is. I have yet to see any major physiological advance in 25 years that's any different, except for drugs, which, people at the highest level of any sport do,
mm-hmm.
but the actual training... But it doesn't even matter, because it matters if you don't have the guys. It doesn't matter what the hell you do.
Mm-hmm.
You're not going to win. And right. if you have the guys, you can pretty much do anything, and you'll still win. So it's just this internal search for talent.
Right.
And anybody that's a real coach knows that. At least that's my opinion. So,
there's
no point in telling you about all these. You know, this coach, he's Polish. Yes, but you have a unique system. You are doing. It's because I have to. I don't get international level rowers, but I like it. I enjoy it. So. But it's not applicable to anybody else. There's no one else that has an interest in doing it. It's too much work. And I like. No, I don't want to waste weekends anyway. I like to spend them with my children and watching their sports. To be honest with you, but seriously, you know how it is. You have fun with your children, and then you know you wouldn't have thought that 15, 10 years ago. Oh, I'll just keep going. But I'm sure now you reconsider yourself when you go. I gotta miss their whatever it is, their thing, their soccer games, their pageants. Anyway, that's the way I feel.
When did you?
Of course, I can. Money speaks. You know, if they paid me, now I would do it. Yeah, well, if this was like you know, Bo Ryan, they gave me $20,000. Yeah, I'll show up. No problem. I'll talk about anything you want me to talk about.
Right.
But for you know $500, I'm not doing it.
So, did you, or when did you realize that how it was set up wasn't conducive to you making the 84 Olympics?
It's not really. I never had a clue. But rowing is just like if athletes drive your success as a coach, who you row with drives your success in rowing. Even if you're a single sculler in a Gordon, those people are known to be kind of, you know, they would be like theoretical physicists versus you know, practical or whatever they call the ones who actually do work. And even scholars themselves need good people to train with. But if you're going to row a small boat, a pair in particular, you need a great partner. And it just didn't occur to me that I needed a partner better than I was. And I knew that this partner that I was rowing with, a heck of a nice guy, he just wasn't as good as I was. And then the next year, I got with two guys who were exceptionally good, and it made a huge difference. So, and one of my other buddies from Cal, or at least a guy who was in my, asked me to row with him in a pair. And two reasons I didn't do it, I remember, was one is just fear of change. And oh my God. And the other was I didn't want to hurt the feelings of the guy I was with. So that guy partners with somebody else and makes the Olympic team, a guy who wasn't as good as I was. So that. Okay, learned that lesson the hard way. Who knows what would have happened if I was with them, but it would have been a lot better.
Right. So. You alluded to this when you said that the top athletes in any sport probably have either tried or are taking some sort of performance enhancing.
I mean, that's kind of a controversial subject, but...
But I guess I want to look at it as the lens through 1984, you know, sort of your own personal.
Look, everybody knew that the Germans were, these Germans. There was no question they were. I mean, all of them. And even if you're talking about that era.
Right.
Then I don't think anything was happening in the U.S. at the time.
So at least what you saw, you know, people you were trying to.
I never saw anything that indicated to me that anybody else was doing it.
Okay.
Part of it is because you didn't notice any giant change in anybody. You know, so there's no question that I don't know what I don't know in current sports, but you know, at the professional level. But like I said, I'd always heard that Lance Armstrong was. I've heard that a decade ago. I believed it, so sure enough, it's true. I think it's more widespread than people think. And it's sad, though, but I understand the advantage that they're looking for. They feel they're stuck. It's like a prisoner's dilemma thing, you know. They feel they have to do something to keep pace, and it's their livelihood. So it's a really difficult subject, really difficult.
Right.
I'm glad I don't have to face that. You know, the performance-enhancing drug of choice for me and everybody else is caffeine, which I can easily see somebody rationalizing. Caffeine's a performance booster, so what's the difference?
Right.
So anyway, it's a tough subject.
But
I've never noticed even a rower, like even here, anybody that I suspected of that after all these years.
So you haven't suspected any of your students?
No. Part of it is because there's such growth sometimes, you know, between, like, mm-hmm. say, sophomore and junior year.
Right.
I don't mean just mean bigger, stronger. It's just development. Nothing. Not really. And, you know, I can't speak for any other sport here, but all I know is that the fridge, remember, when he came along, mm-hmm. 300 pounds was big.
Mm-hmm.
That's a minimum. What, are people just eating more? I don't know.
Right.
I have no idea. I really don't.
Well, I remind my, you know, when I talk to folks about college football or pro, my friends,
right.
you know, I'm not talking
sure.
professionally about,
right.
but our line here at UW is usually bigger than most NFL lines,
yeah,
at least the last few years.
Right, there's some big dude. Part of it is that it's considered a high value now, so now they're selecting
right.
giants. It's not like those kids are coming here at 240. They're coming here over 300
right.
pounds. There's some big dudes.
Right.
Yeah, you're right. We're known as the offensive line in Wisconsin in particular.
Mm-hmm.
It's unbelievable how big they are. I'll see them at store occasionally.
Mm-hmm.
Guys who can look me in the eye and are, you know, 100 pounds heavier than I am. Impressive the heck out of me.
Right. So let's talk about the 85 World Rowing Championship. Is that, you said you got hooked up with some different partners.
Yeah,
is that the start of that?
Of course, you know, probably the most important race that I had with this partner, of course, he totally reloaded to get sick. And instead of winning, we got third. It wasn't at trials, but it was U.S. Nationals. So that kind of hurt my position. And then they weren't sending a full team. They were sending an eight. And then there was a trial for the pairs. They didn't send a straight four, which is a four without a coxswain, and then Cox four. And I was in and out of all those things. And then eventually that sent me down to the Cox pair trial, and I got second. And anyway, they made me an alternate. And a guy that became my partner was in there in the pair, and they were doing well. And then his partner got sick, so he couldn't even row, and he got sick enough that they didn't make the grand final, which is the top six. They made the petite final, which is 7 through 12, and he couldn't even row in it. And then he asked me, "Okay, you want to row?" I said, "Okay," and I rowed, and we won easily by like 10 seconds. Just destroyed the field,
mm-hmm.
which is always a shame to wonder what would have happened if we could have been in the final itself. We probably would have won a medal. But anyway, this guy was a really good rower. Dan Lyons is his name. Lyons.
But that happened because his partner.
Correct. Yep.
And you just happened to be the alternate, just
yeah.
in case something like this.
Hardly ever get to row,
right.
But
something
really,
like this would have happened.
Yeah. And I had rowed a couple practices in the heat because guys got injured or sore or something.
Mm-hmm.
But that worked out well. And then from there, I went to Oxford. So.
Yeah. Where were those world championships?
In Belgium.
Belgium.
Near Brussels.
We might have alluded to this when you said that beer in Venezuela was, you know, $4 a case.
Yeah.
Do rowers, at least at that era and at your age at that point, were you enjoying the social aspects of being in places like that as much as the rowing, or was it?
You don't, you can't. While it's happening, it's only
yeah.
afterward.
Okay,
and I think afterward a bunch of us. We rented a VW van and drove down to the south of France, which on the map didn't seem very far, but it was kind of far. And we were there for a week, and then went to Paris with another friend of mine, and then came home. And just, you know, you could drink an enormous amount of beer.
Mm-hmm.
It's fun. That's the good old days. The good old days aren't that you could drink a lot of beer. He said it didn't affect you
right.
very much. That was the difference.
Yeah.
And you could sleep whenever you wanted.
Yes.
That's long gone now.
Mm-hmm. It's the wake up in the morning and just sort of shake your head and you can start over.
I've always wondered, you know, here I am in my 50s now, and there's still a social life, and you'll go places, and let's say, on Saturday night, for example, we have to go to St. Patrick's Day party. And I'm already plotting, can I sleep a little bit? Because I realized, yeah, when I was younger, I did have more fortitude to keep it going longer. Except there was one difference. You slept all the time. You get to sleep during the day. That was normal.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have a full day like I'll have Saturday. And Friday night, we're going to row at the Rocks River. I won't get back till 8 o'clock. And then I have practice. And then we have a camp here, like a development camp. At 1:30, you'll go to 4.
I wouldn't have had a day like that leading up to a busy night. So I'm giving myself a bit of credit. But yes, we liked to socialize. That was fun.
But it sounds like
at the time, women's rowing was, you know, that's a natural people to hang out with other women's rowing. It was still, it was more separate, and it wasn't, I wasn't a big component like it is today, I think, current rowers. So not just here, but just in general.
Right.
It was like two separate worlds.
So from the 85 World Championships, you go to Oxford. How does that, how do you end up getting
there?
Well,
just because I get to know these, you get to know the coaches when you're in Europe and et cetera. So, and they're always recruiting Americans. That's how it's really that simple. And it was a common thing to do, still is. So.
And did you have to be, I know nothing or very little about Oxford or, you know, sort of British university system. Did you actually have to matriculate there to row?
Yeah, you can't be an exchange person. Okay. Having said that, it's way looser, the whole operation. I mean, you row there at the time indefinitely, like six, seven times. There's no eligibility, you know, like 4 years and you're done. But yeah, you got to be matriculated. For the, I've told people before, I wouldn't have gone if it wasn't for rowing. But I would have gone just for rowing. So, so it was good. But the rowing itself, I don't want to get too far in it. It's just too complicated of a subject. But I just remember the same partner that I had in the Pan Am Games and the guys, the guy that I tried the World Champions or tried the Olympics with. He came with me at the same time. And I'm like, oh gosh, we just weren't good enough. I knew right from the start. That's when I started in inklings. I realized I could be a coach because I realized that we're not very good. And Cambridge at the time had their best team. They had years, and they ended up killing us in that race. It wasn't even close. It really wasn't. Not even close. And hence I learned that year I clearly knew it sucked, the whole thing. And they didn't have a coaching system like we have. They had this sort of gadfly, Dan Topolsky was his name, and then every 2 weeks you would have a guest coach. Very different than here. Right? And so you didn't have a head coach like you have here. So it was, I would consider, disorganized and extremely time inefficient, and we weren't very good. So that makes for misery. We were, I mean, we were so slow. Our 2V here easily could beat it every single year. That's how bad it was. And I knew it at the time. So, and that did not make me happy. I, what I should have done was either not row or just sucked it up and said, all right, I'm not going to talk about it. We're just going to make it as good as we can get, which wouldn't have been much better. But I didn't do that. So I talked too much, you know, made it other people miserable around me. And then the next year comes along, and then a bunch of Americans, buddies of mine, are interested, and they come and row. And I didn't play that one out well either, because after the first year, I was asked if I wanted to be president, which gives you unlimited power at the time. And I had no interest. I was too lazy. I don't want to be president. You got to make phone calls. You got to organize coaches. The president had a lot more power than the head coach. I should have. Then I could have solved a lot of problems. But I didn't do it. So. Then it led to this whole mess. And that was strange.
The mess that ended up, we're talking about the mess that ended up in like mess, People Magazine, New York. New Yorker, I'm sure others.
A lot bigger in the current environment.
Oh, yeah. It would have been
real big. But the, learned a lot from that, though. But anyway, I would say that that probably, I didn't immediately want to become a coach, I can tell you that. But there was always a part of me that there was just a bit of a hubris almost. It's like, yeah, I'm good at this. But the other part is, I'm only good at this because most of them are so bad. That's what I learned about coaches. I had a lot of coaches. Like, just small encounters with some of the most famous rowing coaches ever. And most of them, if they weren't incompetent, didn't inspire me or weren't very good. At least I had kind of a romantic view that they would be amazing. I'm sure you've been disappointed by some of these academics that you've thought highly of, and you actually encounter them. Okay, boy.
Right.
Not as good as I thought. And, I mean, some were, but not many. And, but most of them are what I would call man management is what they're bad at. The ability to manipulate and read your core people. Mm-hmm. That was the worry, and I knew I was good at that. Why, I had no idea. But I was. I felt I was good at that, and I joke about it, turned out I am good at it, and I was better than them. That doesn't mean, all right, I can stop now. Now that I wasn't trying to prove it to anybody. Mm-hmm. I just figured, one, I wanted to see if I could do it, and two, is that these athletes deserve better than people like I had. Mm-hmm. So, and hence, you know, it's funny, this guy, this Polish coach, keeps pursuing. I was talking to Bo, because he coached him a bit too. It's so ironic. I said that this guy, a lot of what I learned from him physiologically, I still do, you know, 25 years ago. Yet he's asking me, it's bizarre, a circle, you know, that somehow I would say, I don't have any secret, I'm just doing what you told me to do 25 years ago. And he's a good example of a guy who thinks there's more to it than there is. Mm-hmm. Which is probably the root of why I don't like to do any of these presentations, because I don't think there is much more than what I've said.
So you rode in the boat race in 86, but you didn't in 87. Yeah.
And it turned out that I made the boat. They selected the boat, and don't quote me, but I don't know, something like February of 1987. I made it on what they call bow side, starboard side. And I'd already told a bunch of guys, I won't row on starboard side, because even though it was good enough to be in the boat, I felt it wasn't my strongest side. The boat would be better off with me on the other side. The problem was this guy that was president, who I had rowed with the year before, wanted to be in the boat at all costs, and that's really what happened. And then all the British rowers walked out. Not to support me, but I mean, it looked like it wasn't that they were anti-me. It was just the whole thing was so screwed up. Mm-hmm. And that's how it all began. It wasn't that I walked out. They did. Mm-hmm. They refused to row with him. The British rowers. So
they didn't want to row with the guy who was the president who wanted to be in the boat.
And then, you know, they didn't also realize what they're dealing with and the constitution of the boat club and blah, blah, blah. And, there's so many ironies to it, not the least of which is at the time the boat club president was selected by each college had their own boat club. The presidents of those boat clubs, each college elected. Generally, it was like a Russian election. You know, they just put one candidate, everybody voted unanimously over. But that year, after that, this shows you how screwed up the whole operation was. One of our, quote, rebels was elected president. This is a guy who was an American who wasn't even, I don't know that it ever happened before or since, that somebody who wasn't a blue, in other words, in the race before, mm-hmm. got elected. No one ever talks about that. That's because it was so screwed up. But there's a million other details, so I just don't want to, not that it's too bad, it's just, I don't want to get into it. Mm-hmm. It's complicated. You can read the books. And what's, like so many books, especially the most famous book, there's all these little elements of truth, but it's so wildly exaggerated you can't even recognize it. Mm-hmm. There was another book by a woman named Alison Gill. I can't even remember the name of it. I think it was Gill, G-I-L-L. And she wrote a far more sober account of it, which was pretty accurate, mm-hmm. but not the True Blue or whatever that book's called.
Okay.
But I would say that spurred me to be a coach, though. Sure.
So your experience.
I did other things, you know.
Right.
Between, I went to New York and those sorts of things. But it was so bad, you know. I was just so poorly led. If you don't have any, if there's no leadership, you know, then it's just a vacuum. Then either false leaders arise or just total anarchy or chaos, which is pretty much what that situation was. Mm-hmm.
Was there anything about your own age, and by that I mean, you know, by that point you're in your late 20s, is it becoming more difficult to be competitive?
Physically?
No,
it's just that psychologically that broke me as far as, to be good at rowing you have to train hard, and I like to do that, but then at that point I just had no interest. I had to get out of rowing, you know. Mm-hmm. So in 1987 I came back, and then I moved to New York, so... Did all sorts of things like bike messenger, foot messenger, bartender, ran a nightclub, did all sorts of cool stuff, all sorts of adventures, you know. It was fun.
And that was all in New York?
From 87 until Yeah, I mean, it's really not even, that's just it. That's what I did. I had some great adventures, but nothing in particular.
Mm-hmm.
And then, and I went back to England a couple of times because to visit all my English friends. I went in the summer of 88 and helped coach a bit. Summer 89 to row at Henley with another group out of Newark. And then went in 92 just to hang out with watch racing, you know, at Henley. This is all at Henley. And then that's when my buddy Dan Lyons, who I rode with in the 85 World Championship, asked me, he was going to go coach at Navy because he rode at the Naval Academy. You know, I want to come and, you know, be his essentially unpaid assistant. And I thought, all right, this is my time. If I'm going to do this, it's now. And so I arrived at the Naval Academy in, when was it, August of 1992. And that spurred my interest in coaching.
Right. You know, we're just about at 50 minutes. If you don't mind, maybe we could wrap up here. We could do one more where we then would talk about, you know, your coaching,
sure, sure,
including getting the gig here and then some of the stuff
yeah,
you do here.
Good.
All right.
Just set it up.
Yeah. Right. So thank you very much for your time.
Yeah.